Welcome to episode 21, Trend Spotting and How to Break Through the Noise.
Welcome to the PR Playbook Podcast with Ranjini Joshua, the only podcast that teaches you how to strategically navigate the world of public relations and social media and grow a powerful brand.
Hello, and welcome to episode 21. Before we get started, I do want to apologize for some Wi-Fi connection issues we had during this interview. We will try to make a transcript available in the show notes just in case you miss any part of it, but I think you should be able to hear most of it. I'm really excited because today I get to interview Sasha Lukacs, news reporter with Mashable. Hi, Sasha. It's great to have you on the PR Playbook podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. She's actually joining us remotely, so we might have some internet connection issues, but we'll work through that as we go to make sure everything sounds as good as possible. Sasha is joining us here from South America, so we're excited to have her today. So today's episode is going to talk about trend spotting and breaking through the noise, which is always relevant, but even more relevant right now because there's so much noise to break through if you're trying to reach to a top-tier media like Mashable. Now, Sasha usually covers the automotive and transportation industry, but when news like the pandemic wreaks havoc on the media landscape, it's typically all hands on deck for staff reporters. Sasha, you recently wrote an article about the pandemic and I think something with Tangled in there, which is not your typical beat. This leads me to kind of my first question. How are editorial assignments made when big news like this breaks and kind of encompasses the entire, you know, volume of the media?
Yeah, no, great question. It's a new terrain we're entering into here. From what I've seen so far for the past few weeks of coverage, we're all still trying to keep our beats in some way, but being pretty flexible and pick up things that are somewhat related and adjacent. You mentioned an article I wrote about, it was actually about Google Trends, what people are searching for on Google. And pretty funny, the top thing is about Tangled, the Disney movie, because it takes place in the fictitious land of Corona. So people are, you know, making this connection to coronavirus.
Well, I can tell you right now, Corona is not a fictitious land. That's where I live.
But yeah, there's also a Corona Heights in New York. Yeah, there's lots of Coronas.
But definitely probably wasn't around when Tangled was, you know, conceived to be whatever time period that was conceived to be made in.
Yeah, exactly. So that actually came from one of the editorial leadership was just had the idea and it trickled down to me just to poke around on Google Trends and to see what if there was any stories and managed to find that as something that stood out and fit with our news outlet. Then there's also, like I was saying, trying to find stories that somewhat relate to my beat. Like you mentioned, I take on transportation and tech. And so usually it's more autonomous vehicles and electric cars, but, you know, kind of stretching it out. Yesterday I wrote about online delivery and shopping, which, you know, logistics and stuff kind of relates to transportation. So I've taken some ownership over that.
Actually, I'm gonna throw a curveball at you just real quick. And yeah. I haven't read anything, but do you know anything about how like companies like Uber and Lyft are handling all of this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm working on a story right now about drivers trying to get compensated or trying to find ways to have, you know, either local governments help support them during this time or
I think it's typically difficult as like a 1099 employee, right? Because I believe they're 1099. So it's kind of challenging to get, you know, unemployment from something like that, which, you know, 1099 is a benefit in some times. And then in times like these, it's like, what the heck is going on? That, you know, you can't really get a lot of additional support because you're a freelancer technically.
Yeah. So there's all those type of stories. Mashable, it's a fine line. Like my outlet, we're very focused on the consumer side.
Sure.
So trying to make it relate to how your commute is affected, how ordering an Uber is affecting you. But at the same time, I guess more personally, I like to be able to report on the driver experience from the gig share workers and making sure their stories are told. So it's definitely a balance. covering that. I did a story just after coronavirus was declared a pandemic and talked about, at that point, what was just then pretty lower ride rates on ride sharing and other, you know, public transit systems and even scooters and other things. So that has obviously developed over the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I feel like that's a whole nother podcast, right? It's just the gig worker community and how they're dealing with this, which is, I imagine, challenging for them.
Yeah, so there's definitely a lot within my beat to cover and to be pretty, I don't want to say creative, but to get a little more interpretive of what my beat entails in this time period, because this isn't, you know, a typical typical week for news. So it is all coronavirus, like you said, it is mostly dominated by coronavirus, but there's a lot of different facets that go into this. And so we're really digging down into all those little corners.
And that kind of leads me into that next question that I had was, how much control do you actually have over what you write? And I guess I'm guessing, like, you kind of gave us a little bit of an idea of, like, you have a little bit of creative license within your beats, but can you give us an idea of, like, kind of the process of, like, when either you get assigned a story or if you select a story and then what that looks like from there?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I have a fair amount of control, but I definitely listen to my editor. So if he assigns me something, you know, and he's like, let's get this. If he's, you know, another outlet reported on, I don't know. We actually, recently this happened. It was like a SpaceX story. I've recently taken on space travel as added to my beat. So,
cool.
You know, it was a SpaceX story about, you know, private citizens taking flights to the space and paying for flights to space. Not coronavirus related, but, you know, it wasn't something that I pitched or that a third party pitched. It was like the New York Times had gotten a scoop or something, and Keith was like, you know, we should have something on this. So, you know, then I reached out to SpaceX, reached out to the company they're partnering with, and, you know, found the blog post, you know, did all my reporting, and then put together a Mashable version of the story, which was a little bit more tongue-in-cheek and, you know, maybe more about the exorbitant cost and kind of the ridiculousness of it, more than like, this is a big for mind or whatever type of story. So yeah, I definitely will work on that. But then I'll, at least my relationship with my editor and with my team is, I'm very much able to insert my own preferences and maybe my own background or knowledge on a topic that does get assigned. I was on vacation last week, not really a vacation, but I was supposed to be climbing Machu Picchu. And my editor had emailed, like, let's dig into the ethics of online shopping during the coronavirus pandemic. And it's actually been interesting. I've been back for the past 2 days and been interesting how the story has evolved just based on, like, my interest in it and what I'm focusing in on it. Because for my editor, he was kind of interested in the small business aspect. I'm interested in the, you know, how you should feel guilty or if you shouldn't, and the mental calculus of if you're putting, you know, workers in danger just so you can get a product. So there's a lot of different aspects to this type of story. So that's always, sorry if that's like really specific, but.
No, that's great. I think it's really interesting. You have a dynamic, like your editor assigns you a story. Like you said, he has like a special interest in it, but then as the writer, I mean, you have to have your own interest to actually get it done. I mean, you have to be interested in what you're writing. So it's, I imagine, well, this kind of, again, leads me into my next question about trend spotting. And, you know, you guys are picking up on trends and reporting on them. And sometimes it is your beat, sometimes it isn't your beat. Like what for you draws you into the story when you're looking at trends like that? You know, obviously you're probably from the perspective of my editor assigned me the story, what are the different aspects that I think are interesting? So I'm guessing that you're coming from that kind of angle as well. But is there anything else? I'm guessing your editor wants you to cover a specific thing, you want to cover a specific thing. Like, how do you check off the list of things that you want to cover and like kind of choose a direction for that story?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. First and foremost, the biggest filter is, what's the Mashable angle? And you can insert any publication into that. For me, I work at Mashable and they give me my paycheck. So it's a Mashable angle. And it's hard to define. And I think I've actually had this conversation with you, but there's no like special equation or algorithm that says this is a Mashable story.
Right.
But there is almost, in that it's like a feeling mixed with like a certain idea of that we cover, you know, tech and consumers and kind of younger millennial-ier people. And
yeah.
You know, there's certain things that like we hit, like you were saying, a checklist. Like there's some things that are kind of a checklist, even within my beat. I know my editor has always wanted me to refine it, but you know, sometimes I'll get off track because I'll want to write about something cool that Volkswagen is doing. Mm-hmm. And my editor will pull back and be like, we don't really cover just like generic car stuff. Like that might be a cool, it was like BMW recently unveiled a new logo. And I was like, oh, like I did the Uber, redid their logo story. That did well. Let's do BMW. And then my editor was kind of like, let's kind of go back to our basic like checklist. And, you know, if they were a Tesla or some other all electric company, maybe, but more of just like a traditional auto, which we're not trying to be a Consumer Reports or a, you know, Car and Driver.
Like Rob Reporter. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. So it's easy to sometimes like, that does work. And then you have to think about even more filters that come in like, we try to only cover like, you know, where tech intersects with transportation or where tech intersects science, because otherwise you just become a kind of general interest news outlet, which we aren't. And we know that. And I think it's really important. So, and that all comes down to, so trend spotting is really about trying to figure out what our audience is craving and wants. Again, it's really freaking hard to do that. But, you know, we have data from past stories. You see what does well. There's certain topics that always, you know, you can look at it. We use different metric and analytics tools, and you just always see that if it's something involving Elon Musk, it's going to do well. People love, like, Google Maps and some other random topics that you're just like, I guess the people like it. Give them what they like.
That's that kind of sparked something in me to ask, you know, what could, and this is not a question from the ones that we discussed, but what could people ask themselves before reaching out to someone at Mashable, particularly you or anybody really, like what is like the messaging that they need to check themselves with and say, oh, this would be a good fit for Mashable?
Really thinking about the consumer side of it. I think that really makes it crystallizes a lot of pitches and angles, really. I get a lot of B2B companies.
When you say consumer side, are you asking like, you know, why would the consumer care or why the consumer would think it's cool or which questions specifically are we answering?
Mm. Yeah, I guess the why would a consumer care or how does it impact?
Right.
And the consumer being like a Mashable reader who's like, somebody in their early 20s.
Kind of an early adopter, probably, right?
Yeah, like a little bit more tech, very online person.
Yeah.
Yeah, it helps eliminate a lot of, because there's lots of cool stories like behind the scenes of a company. Mm-hmm. But if it really doesn't impact, like, I don't know, Apple's a really good example where we have to be pretty picky about what like behind the scenes stories we write about Apple. We have a huge Apple following. Like if we write about iPhone, if we write about Macs, you know, certain topics within Apple, like Mashable is very well known for having that relationship and that we write about that. But it has to be something that's gonna, you're able to connect it to, okay, this affects their like purchasing decision or, you know, what the iOS is like, what their experience is like on their phone.
So kind of like how it ends up impacting the consumer behavior after they read the story.
Yeah.
To some degree, I guess. I wouldn't be 100% on that. But
yeah, it's just, it needs to be relevant to somebody's individual life more than just like, oh, that was a cool story about how the founder of this company did something cool. I don't know.
Right.
Again, this is not a hard and fast rule, but it tends to be a better way to get things through. Because even with like Uber and Lyft type stories, if it's 100% about, okay, drivers aren't making money, the readers obviously have some sympathy for that, but they also want to know, oh, so there's no longer Uber pool or shared rides because of the coronavirus. I should be, you know, sanitizing my hands before I get into a call, you know, like there needs to be a more clear cut connection directly to the audience.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. You have mentioned your editor quite a few times. So I'd love to like just explore that a little bit on what is like, you know, just quickly, like what is the editor's role when you are like working on a story and then submitting it? What do they do for the person who's writing the story? And what is the role of the editor at the end of the day? Just like to give people like a little bit of insight on how that relationship is.
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone has different relationship with right. their editors. For me, my current situation, it's very much, they kind of are a wrangler of all the ideas coming out of my head. And also, I guess, a curator of my ideas. Okay. You know, we're always encouraged to be pitching our own ideas. And I see everything as a pitch. Like you're constantly pitching. You're constantly pitching. Even if it's just, like a quick little news, like a news bit. What's the word?
I'm sorry. Like a brief?
Like a news hit. Like if it's just a quick hit on, I don't know, like I almost 100% cover if Uber or Lyft has a new feature within the app.
Sure.
So like one comes to mind from more recently, I think in February, they added a translation feature using the Google API so that you can, you know, text with your driver in, you know, all text in English and they'll translate it into Chinese.
That's really helpful because when I was, well, in Spain, they banned Uber, but I mean, I think they had Uber there at one point and that would have been so much easier because the guy's calling me in Spanish. And although I took a lot of high school Spanish, like I did not, it wasn't going well. I could tell you that much.
Yeah, exactly. So just things like that. So not to get too bogged down in the topic, but.
Right.
Yeah. So something like that, even if it is just a quick hit, quick hit is the word I was looking for. Yeah. Even if it is just a quick hit or an embargo that Uber is giving me, you know, saying on Thursday, we're going to announce this. And they tell me on Tuesday. So I have like a day or two to put it together, put my own spin on it. You know, I don't just barrel ahead and do it. I always check in with the editor. We have a pretty transparent process where a lot of times what I would consider a pitch goes out to like the entire tech team. Like I try to put everything out on Slack, but then of course, you know, there's some back channel direct messaging and some emails that I'll just keep with my editor or some assistant editors and him. So yeah, I mean, everything is a possible story. So you kind of have to just talk it out.
Yeah.
And there's different processes for different types of stories. Like I said, I do quick hits all the time. And there's also kind of like one day or 2 day stories where it might be a little bit more involved. You know, you're talking to two sources, not just going off a press release type of thing. And then there's the even bigger story that's something you're kind of putting a lot into. You're going on Lucid, a new electric vehicle company based in the Bay Area. And, you know, before I come to South America, I had gone and visited them at their headquarters, got a tour of their factory, spoke extensively with the CEO, you know, and so then that became this bigger story that was, you know, many edits back and forth. You know, I wrote up my version of it. The editor kind of, you know, we reshaped it a bit after I'd written it with one angle in mind, you know, things change.
Right. Right.
So editors also do the very stereotypical editing, which is nice. So yeah. So there's kind of like the idea generation part, finagling an angle and doing the reporting, which is more on you as the reporter. And then it kind of goes back to the editor once you write it. And then it's kind of a back and forth. And
I think people tend to not realize, like, you know, people tell me, they say, oh, just like pitch this story and get it placed. And I don't think they realize, like, everybody has a job to do. Obviously, my job is pitching stories to media, but the media also has a job and there's goals involved with publishing your job and a process like you're explaining here that I think they just don't realize like how challenging it is. It's for me, it's kind of similar to when I tell like web dev people like, oh yeah, can't you just get that up on a website, when it's like very complicated to do something. Mm-hmm. But for me, I'm not a web developer, so I have no idea. So it just, I think when you're not in the role, it's very difficult. One of the things I wanted to cover in today's podcast was like, typically, like, you know, so people can understand if their story is a story and what they should really be pitching. Like, when you're publishing a story, obviously interest and all that stuff is great, but what is your actual goal, the outcome of the story? Are you guys looking at eyeballs or clicks, or like, how do you guys measure the success of a story?
I mean, we don't want to say that it's clicks, but definitely like unique views is a metric that everyone across the board is paying attention to. And everyone has access to those numbers. I don't think that's unique to us, but so like, if a story does well in pure numbers or clicks or views, however you want to think of it, that's always great. But there's also other metrics within our toolkit that sometimes get overlooked. Like sometimes there are stories where people actually read the whole story. Like if you wrote a 600-word story, and we have measurement tools to see, oh, everyone only read the first like paragraph, you know, right. Like no one scrolled to the bottom. So that can also be another kind of success, if it's like, well, people are reading this whole thing, or they're staying on the page for a whole minute, which is
right.
A long time in the internet. And then there's also the like longevity of a story.
Right.
Those are more like SEO friendly stories, often a lot of utilities. I just updated a whole story on emotional support animals that I had written almost 3 years ago. Yeah, and I just updated, there's been a lot of changes on, this was pre-coronavirus, a lot of changes on airline policies surrounding animals on planes. And so, you know, I did a whole update and pushed that out.
Sure.
Just last month, because that was a story that we were seeing, you know, people were going back to it constantly. Because a lot of news stories, even if they do really well, after the first day or two, they're kind of done. And you can see it. You see the, you know, page views drop, and it's over. But then there's some stories that just have a lot of life, and those are awesome. And I think they're usually really helpful stories, like more news you can use, which I'm a big fan of.
I like that.
But sometimes they're also just, you know, people, I think there's a story that does well on Mashable, and it's like 50 websites to go to when you're bored. And it's like, from 2014, and it's just like, I don't know if it's that helpful of a story, but it does really well. So.
It passes the time, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's different ways to measure success. Then there's also PR, we call them like PR mentions. I don't know if that's the right way to frame it, but that's what we call it. But basically, if I get linked to other articles, if I'm cited, if I'm referenced,
oh, right.
You know.
Okay.
So if like a Washington Post story about something happening with Tesla,
refer like, to you.
As Mashable wrote,
yeah,
that's considered a big win.
It's you know, the like, quality of the content, right? Like, is like the higher quality, so, more likely exactly. They'll do that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's harder to measure our PR team from our parent company. They don't really measure it, but they keep track, and they always let us know, like, oh, like your article was in, you know, the New York Times newsletter this week or whatever.
Yeah, that's definitely a win.
Those are considered wins, yeah.
So then what is your dream of like, I guess not a dream, but like how would you suggest that when you are writing a story, you're in it, what are the things that people or the PR people or the people that are working with you on the story can do to make that process better for you and make the story better for you?
I know, I wish I had a better answer for this, because it's sometimes things just click. I mean, I think also if I always don't know what to call it, PR professionals could understand a little better that your pitch might not be a full story, but it might supplement a story really well. And there's definitely plenty of people who understand that and are like, oh, great. We're happy to be like, mm-hmm. We're happy to be cited as, you know, something in the third graph to make your point. And oftentimes people will say, oh, here's a survey we've done. And it's hard to explain that I'm not going to write a whole story just about your survey results, but I will gladly take your survey results and put it into a bigger story that I'm working on about the effect of coronavirus on people's commutes or whatever.
Sure.
But it's not going to be a story that you released your annual report about the state of, I don't know, I get a lot of pitches about, what's it called? Voice recognition in the car. Like, I'm not going to do a whole story on that one report. And I understand why people could be confused, because it's like certain reports we will do a whole story on, but it's like this weird magic elixir where it's like, okay, maybe if Consumer Reports does their annual list, we will actually write about that annual list, but very few companies hit that caliber. Like, it's so it's hard to kind of tell a random analytics firm, like, we're not going to do a whole story based on your research, but we will gladly use your research if it helps with the story.
No, that, so like, I think that's really helpful to know. I've pitched surveys and stats before too, and we always try to have them as support to the story that we're pitching. But like, yeah, it's sometimes you'll win on one of those things, depending on what the statistics say. And sometimes it's just a statistic that somebody can add to something else. So like you said, so that totally.
Yeah. And then in a more qualitative point, if it is a pitch about, okay, here's this cool initiative we're doing. This is an old school callback to a story I did last year, maybe even 2 years ago, but it was like Ford was like, here's cool ways we're using recycled materials. And, and I'll be first to admit, I was like, that's cool. I can't write a whole story just about Ford and like touting how great they are. Cause it just becomes I'm not like a little plug machine.
Product pitch, Ford. Yeah.
But it spurred me to kind of collect and find like what you were calling trend spotting. I'm like, this is cool what they're doing. They're taking like old like tequila plants and turning it into plastics for, you know, your center console in your car. And then I talked to some other car companies, and Lyft had happened to send me a pitch about one of their partner brands that, you know, has an alternative to some cleaning supply used in cars. It was like, so then I was like, okay, this is a topic that can become a trend. And from that, I can do a whole roundup. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So I felt bad because I was like, Ford, I'm not going to do a story just on Ford and what you're doing, but it's going to become a part of a bigger thing of like how the auto industry is using recycled plants to make your plastic car parts.
Oh,
you
cool.
know, so then it became a bigger thing. And then I used the Ford pitch, and it was a great pitch. So yeah, so that's more where like something, that's actually a great example of when a pitch becomes a story.
That's
not exactly from the pitch.
Yeah, I'll definitely include the link to that story too.
Oh yeah, I think it has Jose Cuervo in the headline.
Okay, I'll remember that.
But yeah. So,
Going a little bit like lighter here, and I know I've asked you this in previous interviews, but just to give listeners an idea of what they're up against when reaching out to reporters, how many pitches do you typically get in a week versus how many stories do you write in a week?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't ever done an official count, but I would think based on my like daily email load, probably about 50 a week. I don't know, maybe more. It also depends on your definition of pitch. I get a lot directly from companies, like communications teams from companies.
Right.
Which I still consider those pitches. But yeah, it can be a little bit different if it's like a PR agency versus an in-house PR team.
Sure. And how many stories do you typically write?
I write usually about 2 a day, so 10 stories a week, I would say, probably on average. Yeah, I mean, and then that can be lower some weeks, it can be higher some weeks. And also, I don't write like a big feature story every week or every 2 days. So, you know, some weeks I'll have some, you know, a personal essay I'll have written will come out, or a bigger evergreen piece. And yeah, and sometimes I'm assigned a story from our managing editor to just do like an SEO type hit on various topics. Like, I think I have an assignment right now about Google Calendar, and it's like nothing to do with my beat, but I have to work on that, you know?
Right.
We have a travel series that we constantly are, you know, it's like a travel topic.
Right.
So I've done a lot of that just because I've been working while traveling. So, you know, been contributing to that a bit. Again, not necessarily directly my beat, but other things.
No, that makes sense.
And then another important tool I don't know if it's a tool, but another piece of advice to people trying to get certain topics covered. Like Mashable does what we call franchises, or kind of like series or ongoing stories. So like we have a whole travel section now. If you kind of just poke around and you can kind of see, like we do theme weeks, we do theme months. Like right now it's March mindfulness. So you might be a little late, but it's, you know, if you have a meditation app.
Right.
It might be good timing in February to be like, hey, from March mindfulness. Right. So finding those series and franchises, as we call them, can be really beneficial.
Is there a place where you guys have them up, or do you kind of have to ask around?
I mean, you'd kind of have to poke around each media website. You know, it's like Mashable does them a certain way. I know I've seen BuzzFeed does kind of ongoing series about, you know, like what it's like to be a woman on the internet, or what it's, you know, we have like a parenting section that we started in 2018, which is like very much about like how to use the internet and being online and being a parent, you know. Yeah. So, and like, we have an ongoing series about like women in STEM. Yeah. Various, I mean, you can kind of just get a sense if you, it takes some homework, I guess, is what I'm saying, but like you have to kind of poke around, and it's annoying because every news outlet obviously is structured very differently.
Well, yeah, if you really want the coverage, then you'll do your homework.
Yeah, exactly. And oftentimes, you know, it's like, then it's not all just coming into me. It's like, I reach out too. I always tell this to, I have meetings with lots of PR professionals because they just kind of want to get a sense of what I do and how I work and all that. Not similar to our conversation now, but I tell them, you know, like, keep emailing me because I might be working on a story about, I might want to do a March mindfulness story, and I'm going to start looking through my inbox for, you know, meditation, or if I'm doing a story about, you know, some random topic, and I'm going to look for a keyword. And your pitch about talking to the CEO of this VR company might come up, and I might reach out to you and say, hey, is VR CEO lady available? So, you know, so it works both ways. It's just a matter of it's on my timeline, not your timeline, which I can understand and appreciate is frustrating and annoying. Especially if you have clients who are like, we want this now, or this is our quarter one goal. And then in quarter three, you're like, hey, can we chat?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if it comes around, it's always good. So that's never a problem. That's for sure.
Yeah. So sorry if things are delayed.
No worries. I appreciate that you have some sympathy for that.
Yeah.
Okay. My last question is a three-part question, a little bit lighthearted. What is one thing you'd wish people wouldn't do when they pitched, one thing you wish they would do, and your favorite guilty pleasure?
Okay. I guess this is kind of a twofer for what they wouldn't and would do.
Okay.
Is about images and assets. I would love for people pitching to this about photos and assets.
Okay.
Yes. Would love if, I wish they would send them most, usually I, again, it's hard to say, but if we're having a, if it's something that I want to cover, you don't have to ask, oh, do you want photos? Yes, I want photos, but like, I always want photos. I always want any materials you have. If we've started a conversation,
then send it.
Send me your whole pitch deck. I want the whole thing. But that said, sending me just like different variations of the company logo is so, you know, like more lifestyle shots if it's a product, even if it's like a boring, not boring, sorry to say boring, but if it's like a behind the scenes like software company,
yeah,
I can't do anything with like
the data center.
Well, that even could be good.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of like staged group, like team photos from your like about us section of your website. Like, it just, okay. I'm the wrong outlet for that. Like, I'm not like the Business Times where I'm just going to be like, here's a headshot of the CEO. Yeah. I guess just like thinking about the visual side of my pitch, of pitches to me, and like of my stories, like what will be my main image of this story. So that's, maybe that's more further down the line of the pitch relationship. And then I guess for a more traditional like cold pitch, I guess more just like really clear cut. Like you do not need to write a huge block of text. I will not be reading the huge block of text.
I appreciate the candidness for that, because I see some pitches come out like that when I'm, you know, working with other people, and I, mm-hmm. I can't believe if it works or not, but people still do. I've seen it. People still write huge like paragraphs, and I can't imagine that you guys have the time or even the patience to go through all of that. So,
yeah, I mean, it's fine to include like a really lengthy detailed press release, but it's really, I really appreciate, this might be just me being my unique preference, but I always appreciate when a PR person, it's usually once I've established more of a relationship, but they kind of give me a summary, or they pull out, you know, the tidbits that they kind of know or think I'm going to appreciate the most.
Perfect.
Because then I often am able to just like snatch their little paragraph that they summarized and more or less just copy and paste that to my editor and be like, hey, this company's doing this. This is why it's cool.
Right.
Versus like going through the press release and basically doing the reporting mm-hmm. up front that might not even happen if the pitch gets shot, my pitch to my editor gets shot down. It's a whole chain of pitching. So, I really appreciate that.
What is the, you know, just as an added bonus, before we dive into your guilty pleasure, what the average of your pitches getting shot down?
I don't know. I mean, probably at least like a couple a week for sure.
2 out of 10 is,
I mean,
bad.
A lot of,
not too bad.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, things get down all the time, but I don't know. It's hard to say. It's also like I'll say something that I think is just funny, and then my editor will be like, oh, let's write a story about it. And I'm like, oh okay.
You never really know. We can plant a seed anywhere.
Exactly. It's all about the seed planting. Yes. It's like subliminal messages. You just don't even know that they're there.
Right. And the off-brand question of your favorite guilty pleasure.
Yeah. Is that my guilty pleasure? About pitching?
No,
or about no, like
your
life.
Pleasure in life, I would say.
Oh,
personal.
I'm on day 9 of a very strict quarantine, so I'm very food focused right now. So yeah. I'd say my guilty pleasure is going to a restaurant where they make the food and they clean the dishes. But yeah, no, I love. Explore. That's why I was so excited. I'm in Lima, Peru, which is like the food capital of the world. There's some of the world's top restaurants are here. So it's especially excruciating to be on a lockdown. But I love going and exploring local cuisine and restaurants and good food. I don't know if it's a guilty pleasure.
No, that is. I mean, it's
probably should be cooking more. The quarantine is teaching me to cook more.
Cook more or heat up your ramen. One of the two.
Exactly.
Well,
but yeah, it's been fun.
So much for taking the time to come on the PR Playbook podcast today. I am going to, because of our connection, I'm definitely going to get this transcribed. So you guys will be able to see a transcription on the show notes, as well as links to the stories that Sasha mentioned and her profile on Twitter. You can follow Sasha at SashaJOL on Twitter. And as usual, if you have any questions, please send comments, questions, suggestions to podcast@thesilvertelegram.com. You'll find additional show notes and information on Sasha and our pitching tips worksheet on the PRB Playbook podcast main page. That's all for now. Stay safe, healthy, and happy pitching. See you next week. And thank you so much, Sasha.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.